Welcome back to the Mojo Podcast with me, Richard Stokes. So we're right at the end of one month and the start of another. And depending where you are in the world, the end of a pretty strange summer with an uncertain autumn ahead. Will schools return? Will we need to go back to the office? Will we be able to travel freely again anytime soon? Lots of uncertainty, which creates a level of anxiety for sure. Now, something COVID-19 has shone a light on for lots of us, and this could be actually the biggest positive to come out of the Great Pause, is the focus on our relationships. Relationships with our partners and loved ones, with friends, with colleagues, and yes, of course, the key one, our relationship with ourselves. We've either had time to think and perhaps take some action, or we've been forced to reconsider some relationships over these months. By choice or not, we've been put into a place of reflection. As home became the office and the classroom, and the office became a Zoom call, and hanging out with friends has been limited and distanced. So I wanted to look at relationships, especially the key long-term relationships in our lives. Where are they right now? What do they mean? And how can we even better understand what we bring to the key relationships in our lives? To do this, I've got a wonderful guest today. Bodhi Aldridge joins me from Australia. He's a business coach and mentor specialising in creating sustainable change through the relationships we create in our business, our families and with ourselves. He's also a husband, father and grandfather. And as you'll see, the name Bodhi actually means awakening or enlightenment in Sanskrit, and you'll see that's very apt in his case. There's so much wisdom here and loads of applicable nuggets of advice for you so you can show up as a parent, a partner, or a colleague. Bodhi talks extensively about the hero's journey, the work made famous by Joseph Campbell. I recommend doing some reading around this if it's new to you and you're interested. It's often used as a storytelling framework, and it's also a powerful tool for understanding the self. And Bodhi really gets to the heart of the masculine and feminine energies. What they are, where they come from, and how you can better understand yours. And on a personal note, he provides me with some amazing advice for being a new father, suggesting the most powerful parenting tool is where we take responsibility for our own stuff and deal with it. So just let Bodhi's calm, his wisdom, and his knowledge wash over you like the ocean he describes. This is a lovely and really important episode. Please do subscribe for future episodes, leave us a 5-star rating, and deepen your relationship with the Mojo Podcast by writing a short review. I really hope you enjoy. So welcome back to the Mojo Podcast, and I'm really excited to welcome today's guest, someone I've been introduced to relatively recently, and who's going to bring a really new and different perspective to the podcast, I believe, and someone who is literally half a world away from me. So from Byron Bay, Australia, hello, Bodhi Aldridge.
Hello, hello, Richard. Thank you for having me, and hello to all the listeners.
Well, it's great to have you on the show, Bodhi, and I'm glad our timings could link up. So it's not the middle of the night for you and not the middle of the night for me. It kind of just about works. My morning, your afternoon, I think.
Yes, that's right. Evening here, moving into sunset. So lovely time.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. And yeah, you're in Byron Bay, one of my favourite spots in Australia.
Yes, just north of Byron Bay, certainly a beautiful part of the world, and very close to the beach. So that's definitely a part of my energy, what supports me for sure.
Oh, great, great. Oh, we'll get into that in a second. So yeah, I just wanted to check in with you then on how is your mojo today? How would you rate it out of 10?
I'd say 8.5. I have had a couple of bumps the last week or so. We've got some logistics here with COVID and borders and my children and things like that. So just noticing that sort of level, a little bit of level of anxiety that pops up. Yet overall, you know, because I predominantly work virtually, I've had 2 serves today, you know, done my practice. Had some time with my wife, so you know, that keeps me. Had some great conversations today, well, with some clients. So all of that forms part of what informs, I guess, my mojo.
That sounds like a good day so far. Some time in the ocean, time with family, time with clients. That sounds pretty well rounded to me.
Yeah, that's it. That's the wheel of life, isn't it? Keeping check on it all for sure.
Yeah, and you were just kind of. Just suggesting there, then what
you know, I introduced this idea of mojo, this word. What's coming up for you when you're thinking about mojo?
Yeah, it's interesting when you raise that. I guess for me, the three things for me around mojo, first is presence. And, you know, part of my practice, which we'll talk about, is to be present and presence yourself. And certainly for the masculine, which again, we'll talk about, it's an important aspect. The second is purpose. And again, there's purpose within purpose within purpose. So presence, purpose, and the third is that passion, which again, the masculine and feminine comes from the polarity, particularly in those intimate relationships. So for me, I'm mindful of, you know, my practice around presence, my awareness of purpose, and also that passion, that polarity that comes through.
Beautiful and beautifully articulated. Obviously, you've thought through this so probably since we've last talked. Three P's, which obviously is always good. So, presence, purpose, and passion. Well, I'd love to dive into that actually, because I think that'll open up a lot of what we're going to talk about. You know, we're going to broadly talk around the theme of relationships and long term relationships. And this goes to a lot of the work that you do, both with, I think, with individuals and with organisations. So actually, should we just start there? Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the work, which I'm sure feeds all three of those P's, but I'm sure the purpose one especially.
Yeah, I guess, you know, predominantly it's around relationships, intimate relationships, and also working with the masculine and feminine, working with men and women around the masculine and feminine energies. And so because it's such a theme, it plays out in our intimate relationships, it plays out in our family of origin, it plays out in the workplace, it plays out in us individually. And so that's been something which I've explored. And one of the things I did want to acknowledge is all the teachers that I've had, both face-to-face and obviously through all the great work that's out there, and allowing me to embody my experience using those teachings, applying those teachings. And, yeah, you know, my part of the hero's journey, my personal part of the hero's journey, is really bringing those gifts to the world through my embodied experience. You know, my wife and I have been together for 41 years, so it's been quite a journey of exploring these concepts, how to show up fully, and yeah, how to bring myself to the relationship as best I can.
So a lot of it sounds like a lot of what you kind of maybe offer professionally is what you've experienced personally, as you say, in this 41 years of, you know, of relationship with your wife, and I'm sure lots of other relationships as well.
Yeah, as I say, you know, I feel like for all of us on the journey, the embodiment of the teachings, whatever they are, and, you know, coming from a business background, long-term marriage, children, grandchildren, long-term relationships, business partnerships, all of that. You know, if you distilled it all, Richard, it's fundamentally about relationships and communication. You know, and the interesting thing, and when I work with business clients and teams, when I ask the question, what does relationship mean and what does communication mean? Very rarely do people realize it's about the relationship and communication you have with yourself. That's the fundamental piece. And that awareness starts the journey for teams, individuals, couples, because it's like, yeah, you know, how do I relate with myself? You know, what is my relationship like with myself? And what is my communication like with myself? You know, the most powerful communication tool we have with ourselves is our emotions. That's giving us information quicker than anything. And to experience that more, it's about getting present with yourself.
Okay, so I was going to say, I imagine for a lot of people, and maybe when this is done in a, I don't know, a business environment, that sense of reflection on self, do people find that quite hard?
My experience is it's not so much that. Firstly, there's often a bit of a light bulb, because again, it's whilst at some level we're aware of it, when it's explained in that way, I think people go, oh, okay. Because again, the normal definition of relationship and communication is with other.
You know, yes.
And obviously that's important, yet it starts with self. And then the commitment and self-awareness journey starts. And that's, as you know, that goes at the pace of the individual, the team. And, you know, we're all up to where we're up to. And part of it is creating that safe environment to people to explore that, be authentic, be themselves, and be able to share. And I have some very powerful frameworks, which in business, you know, one of the powerful things in culture and culture change is when there's a common language. And so whilst these are simple frameworks, they're very powerful frameworks, because you then start to get people having a common language, people who've been on this journey together. Mm. And it's interesting with business clients, because certainly pre-COVID, most people were spending more time with their work colleagues than with their families in a physical sense.
Yes.
And that can be the fastest way to learn, particularly if you're going on a journey. I mean, a lot of my clients, you know, one global client I've been working with for the last 5 years, and we've been working with the leadership team globally. They've been on a journey together with these frameworks, with this language, with this self-awareness. So you start to see incredible culture change through that, you know, aligned with all the other things around vision and values, the normal sort of business things, I guess.
And that was good, because that was what was coming up for me, was around, and what have you seen that's changed, obviously, in this year that we're in? A year, I mean, the word unprecedented gets perhaps overly used, but I think it might be true, and unprecedented levels of change and working patterns and relationships being challenged, disrupted. What's your view of the change you've seen this year?
Well, it's interesting. I was working with a client last week, a couple who live in Sydney, and they're both, senior management in large organisations. And what's come up for them through COVID, specifically to your question, is she was sharing that when she's in the workplace, typically if she has a conversation with a client and it didn't go well, she'll download on her work colleague, or, you know, there's that cool room, you know, by the water cooler conversation. Mm. And what they're finding now, particularly with lockdown, is it's all of that is in the relationship now. So this incredible intensity of, you know, the dynamic. So it's not just, you know, we go to work and then we come home. It's like we're living together. We're both in separate rooms doing our work. You know, we're coming out, downloading and debriefing with each other. Mm. And so that's, you know, my experience with my couples clients is that's a very real experience they've had through COVID, is that this intensity of, being together 24/7.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to me there's almost this lack of decompression time maybe that you would have had in a traditional separation of work and home. Work as in of the work space, but also this thing that we used to do called commuting obviously had its own stresses, but possibly its own benefits as well. I don't know about maybe just being to release some things and before you got back to home and then maybe have a different type of conversation. I guess that's one way of looking at it. But are there also some big positives coming out of this maybe about more greater understanding of what your partner is doing, what their stresses of work are? Are you hearing that too?
Yeah, and you know, one of the obvious ones, if you take the commute out of a day, certainly couples with children, you know, are finding all of this extra time that they can apply to, time with the children, time with each other. Definitely, if they have enough awareness and have the tools, you can really start to see more clearly each other, as you say, what their day's like, those sorts of patterns and things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, you know, there's many implications, I guess, of what's happened through COVID. In a team setting, and certainly, you know, previously where teams, in my experience, clients were resistant if it wasn't face-to-face, we're now getting incredible outcomes using technology. And people are realizing that, you know, this connection, you know, it is an and conversation. It is face-to-face and it can be through technology. And so that's allowing a lot of leverage. Again, you know, one of my global clients now, we've run several global conferences online this year. And that's being able to go right through the business. Whereas before, you know, I spend a lot of time traveling, I would literally visit the countries and run the conferences. And then we'd get, you know, the leadership group together in a certain country. Whereas now there's more receptivity to let's do this virtually. Let's see what we can create together, really.
Right. So this is indeed this new way of working is having implications for you personally as well, because you're not spending, I think you said you spent like 6 months of the year out of the country, 6 months in. Was that right? So lots of travel and now not so much.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which is, it is timely, yet, my wife often came with me and we would, you know, travel and be able to deliver the work. So that has changed, and it has allowed us more time together, more time with the grandchildren and the children, which is lovely. Yet it's also interesting seeing that dynamic where you can literally still impact global businesses, global teams, with virtual technology, even doing the deeper work. You know, I know that conference calls and presentations obviously have been going on for a long time, yet being able to get people, you know, a team of 10 or 12 sitting virtually and getting them to sit together, to meditate individually, to share authentically. The technology and the culture can be created that way.
I mean, I was listening to something the other day that was kind of suggesting one impact of COVID is almost putting us through 20 to 30 years of change in what will maybe be 1 or 2 years. You know, whether that's at fact, who knows, but the sentiment I absolutely agree with, that it's, you talked about the technology change, but I think, as you say, it's also the attitudinal change to, yeah, we can work this way, we can work differently, and that level of trust and just being okay with as you say, people sitting remotely but still being fully in and fully involved and sharing their innermost selves, it may be something we might not have seen without being kind of forced to do it, do you think?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And there is a sense of acceleration around a lot of things with what's happening. And yeah, I mean, if you think, I mean, you know, the studies show that most people have a resistance to change, you know, an unconscious resistance. And of course, you know, the whole thing about getting out of your comfort zone. And so, as I say, with some of my clients, the thought of me not being in the room, a lot of people will go, that'll never work. And there was a resistance pre-COVID to it being any other way. And because of what's occurred globally, the choices have been limited. And now people are having the experience and going, oh, this works. And so that inherent resistance to change, which we see a lot of in organisations, you see a lot of in relationship, you know, again, it's that willingness to step into your comfort zone, particularly for the masculine, to lean on your edge. You know, that's the place of growth. That's the place of learning. Yet so often people want to sit in their comfort zone. And long-term relationships, that's often what happens. People get caught in a comfort zone and they lose the edge. They lose the polarity. They lose the juice.
Ah, right. So, and you've talked a little bit about, you know, this masculine and feminine energy, and you're talking a bit about the masculine. I'd love to unpack this some more, just some, you know, wonderful words that are coming out there, this polarity, the edge, the juice that's necessary. Can you tell us a little bit more about the masculine and the feminine?
Yeah. And again, you know, there's many ways you can define and discuss this, yet fundamentally for me, It's not gender based, which I think most people accept. And inherently, the energy that travels through the universe, travels through us, travels through nature, the labels we use is that some of that energy we call masculine energy, I call masculine energy, some of that energy is feminine energy. And again, it lives within all of us. And often what you'll find is that people are more leaning into the masculine or feminine energy in themselves. And the simple definition is, so the feminine energy, again, through the universe, through nature, Mother Nature, through us, is all of the energy that flows. It's all about movement. You know, the best example of the feminine energy is the ocean. It's constantly moving and flowing. And the key driver for the feminine, is connection and love, connection and love, connection and love. That's what the energy is seeking. In a healthy state, and like everything, can be distorted as well.
Right.
And then the key driver for the masculine energy. So the masculine energy is the consciousness that can witness and presence the feminine. It's the stillness in us. And its key driver is freedom. And again, can be very distorted in men or that masculine energy. And so these currents are going on all the time within us, often unconsciously, and they show up in our behavior, they show up in our language. You know, the way the feminine communicates is very different to the way the masculine communicates. They show up in the workplace all the time. And so what occurs is that often, and again, I'm going to generalize here, if a man is predominantly in his masculine and a woman is predominantly in a feminine, often the attraction, remember, opposites attract. So if we look at intimate relationships, what occurs is we're attracted to the opposite. That's where the spark is. Sometimes for people, that's where the eros is, that incredible attraction. And that's the polarity. And that creates the juice. And the challenge in long-term relationships is, how do we keep that? How do I keep that juice? How do I keep that polarity? How can I stay strong in my masculine? Obviously, do the initiation into my feminine. Yeah, and my wife stay in her feminine and be aware of her masculine. And that's, again, the difference between people who become companions. Nothing wrong with that. Yet the opportunity is to be more than that, is to keep that spark, keep that juice, keep that excitement, that freshness in the relationship over a long period of time.
And I mean, thank you for that really clear description of the masculine and the feminine and where that polarity sits and how important that is. And so how are we keeping that attraction, that polarity, that juice going on? And as you say, maintaining that electricity and not becoming companions. What's the secret?
Well, fundamentally, you know, like everything, it's an inside out job, and it's about the individual taking full responsibility for the way they show up. And so whether that's in the workplace, as we know, whether that's in relationship, in any context. And so if you're aware and willing to take responsibility for the way you show up, how did I show up today? Did I bring the highest version of myself to the marriage? Yeah. What did I do to manage my energy today? And within that context, Richard, then there are lots of practices and awareness that you can do to tap into your masculine or feminine energy. And so for me, I'm very mindful in my practice of being aware of all of it, and also being aware of when, you know, my wife, Amala, is looking for, you know, that energy to meet her. So one of the simple things, and again, there are many different tools, but one of the simple things is, so for the feminine, one of the most important things for the feminine is for the masculine to be present and to present her. Now, that's not 24 hours a day. Yeah, that can be literally for half an hour a day or an hour a day to be fully present and to witness the beauty, witness the goddess, witness all of the feminine. And so if you have awareness of that, bring that into the relationship, and the feminine feels safe enough to reveal herself as she's being witnessed, as she's being present, then that's the polarity, that's the juice in action.
In that, as you said, that real presence and that witness and the trust that's going on, are we talking about intimacy here? Are we talking about listening? Are we talking about both?
Yeah. I mean, in an intimate sense, in a sexual sense, you know, obviously that's a fantastic context to explore it. Yet, in the integration of this, you know, it's the ability to be present with it as often as you can. And again, you know, one of the most attractive things to the feminine is a masculine who's on purpose. You know, for me, you know, I use, you know, coming from Australia, it's like the masculine that's going out there to kill the kangaroo. You know, whatever that looks like, because a masculine that's on purpose, and again, there's purpose within purpose, yeah, has a clear purpose, in some ways can create a level of awareness and safety for the feminine, particularly the, you know, long-term relationship, children, think about careers, think about the way the feminine has to dance with motherhood, all of those sorts of things. That's another whole conversation. And so if the masculine's on purpose and is able to presence it, yeah, then the feminine can reveal all of herself, all the aspects. And remember, the feminine is like the ocean. It's connection and love. It's connection and love. It's moving all the time. That energy's moving all the time. Yeah. And in a place of safety, the feminine can explore and express and feel okay to, you know, I love you, I love you, I don't love you at this moment, you know. I won't use any language on the podcast, but because that's just all the aspects of the feminine. It's the whole.
Yeah.
It's all of it. And it all wants to reveal itself in a safe place where it can be held and witnessed.
You know, when you talk about the masculine and the feminine, as you said, it's not gender-based, but a lot of this probably comes up, as you said, in your work with couples, but also comes up in your work with organisations as well, this understanding of the energies.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the interesting thing at the moment is we're seeing the collapse of the patriarchal system, which is fundamentally the distorted masculine. And obviously in the US, any listeners in the US, I've got lots of clients in the US, you know, there's some extreme examples of that. They're clinging on, you know, and the patriarch, the distorted masculine, is all about power and control. That's what's driving it or has driven it. And interestingly, in organizations, organizational charts have been designed like an army. You know, we've got a CEO, you know, we've got a managing director, and it's a pyramid, it's a masculine structure. You know, it's all hierarchical, it's all lineal. This is the way the masculine operates. And what we know is that in this decline of the patriarchal system, one of the fundamentals is shifting these structures in organizations. As the feminine rises, which it is, globally, some incredible, you know, movement we can see. The feminine sits in circle. The feminine makes decisions as a collective. It's not a pyramid. It's not, you know, obviously we all have our roles in a team, yet fundamentally we can co-create, if you like. We can collaborate, all of those qualities of the feminine. And as we start to bring more of that into organizations, we start to see incredible shifts around culture, you know, the whole power struggle that occurs in relationships, often in organizations, often, and relationships often, is because of the way the structure is. Now, that takes some courage, and obviously there's a lot of fear, particularly in the masculine, to let go. Yeah, we're seeing it happen, you know.
Yes. So that's what I was, just as you're describing that, I was thinking about, obviously, that look, these ingrained patriarchal systems, generation after generation, kind of following what previous generations have done, but the change is happening. But how can you bring men to that party? How can you make that change happen quicker by, as you're saying, allowing predominantly, in this case, men feel more comfortable with that change?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting generationally. So I work with a lot of young men in San Francisco who've been part of this whole tech boom and, you know, all of the history there. And there's such a thirst and craving, Richard, to understand their role as men, as fathers, as husbands, and the workplace. And I'm not sure what's driving it. My sense is that it's the archetypal energy that, you know, we're all experiencing, you know, as a collective now. There's lots of different energy occurring. Yet, you know, the hero's journey sits within every masculine and the heroine journey sits within the feminine. And so generationally, and, you know, I work with a lot of people in their 30s, and there is a thirst and a hunger. There is, it's almost as if they intuitively know whatever's gone on isn't sustainable. Now, the flip of that, of course, is the distorted patriarchs who are still often in CEO roles. Yet we're seeing some incredible, and you know yourself, I know with my colleagues, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners, some of the work that's happening organisationally is incredible. My belief is the tipping point's occurred. Yeah, we actually have shifted, and now this is the implementation of the change. And obviously, I don't have any idea what the timeline's going to be. Yet, to me, I mean, you can gather evidence for whatever you believe. Yet, you know, my experience traveling globally and talking to lots of people is that, you know, the tipping point has occurred. We're well into the change, and this is, you know, this is Rome crumbling before our eyes, Richard.
Yeah. I think it goes back to perhaps what has happened this year, obviously maybe perhaps driven by a pandemic, but an understanding of racial inequality, gender inequality, income inequality, and climate change all coming together feel like they are driving change even faster. But as you say, I think this started, but perhaps this is going to drive things maybe even more. We talked a little bit when we spoke last time about when you bring, and I'm slightly focusing more on men at the moment, but when you bring men together and you have, I think, men only circles, I haven't experienced a men only circle, but I'm really intrigued to understand what kind of conversations happen, what kind of changes you see, or you say awareness that happens in those circumstances. Can you share a bit of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a very powerful process, and you know, the men's movement has been happening for some time. And what I'm noticing is that you know, even that's evolving in a useful way as well. And so fundamentally, what the masculine's looking for in a men's circle, Richard, is to be seen and to be held. And that was the warrior role. The true warrior role was to hold the space. Yeah, it wasn't to go and, you know, fire bow and arrows at people. It was to be able to presence and hold the space. And so when men get together, and if there's enough awareness to create that safe container by presencing and holding the men, then men can be seen for who they really are. And because most men have had to put on the masks, put on the armor, and, you know, get out there and think they're the provider, or, you know, they've got to fight their way through corporate life, or, you know, their identity is all caught up in their job, or, It's not a common experience for them, particularly with men. And so all of the initiations, all the rituals, all the processes are simply about creating that space.
And as I said, creating a safe space for where real vulnerability and honesty can happen, I imagine.
Yeah, what occurs is, you know, again, if you think about the hero's journey, and we're all at different aspects of it, and, you know, the Joseph Campbell work was very powerful around all traditional wisdom had the hero's journey and the heroine's journey, and they're different. And so the hero's journey, when men sit together, that in itself is takes a lot of courage for a lot of men, is to, as you say, be vulnerable and to sit with men. And so depending where they are on the hero's journey, then there are tools. And fundamentally, you know, so the hero's journey for the masculine, young men, yeah, they go searching for the Holy Grail. So it's an external experience. You think about, you know, whether it's in our current culture or in mythology or in historical culture, you know, you go and discover the world, you go and travel, you go and build your career. What happens is we think the Holy Grail is outside of us. And that's the hero's journey. And then for those men that have the willingness and awareness, yep, suddenly they realize, the Holy Grail was on the bedside table all the time. Yeah, it's actually within me.
Right.
And that's when the work begins.
Right. To exactly what you said right at the beginning in terms of the key to relationships and communication is understanding your relationship with yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And there are parts of ourself that we can explore more easy just with men, as women do with women.
Mm.
And it's an important aspect of the hero's journey.
And what would those areas be that are just a bit easier to access, would you say?
Well, the piece is, if you look at the journey back to our essence, often men can, you know, if we look at the whole area of shame and vulnerability, and obviously all the work Brené Brown's done around that.
Yeah.
The shadow, yeah, which is fundamentally all the things we've hidden in the cupboard under the stairs, and the shame that every human being I've met has around various aspects of their life. To reveal and expose that in front of the feminine is often more challenging for men than in front of the masculine. And it is obviously eventually revealed in front of the feminine. And I'm talking not, you know, doing your one-on-one therapy or, you know, different types of processes, therapeutic processes, yet just in the context of being willing to face your shame, your shadow, and to be vulnerable to that, to acknowledge that. And, you know, the content of that, Richard, varies, but if you look traditionally at the way men have been inappropriate, the distorted masculine, it all lives in the cupboard under the stairs for all of us.
Being in a position as a man with all the fears that we have, the insecurities that we have to go there, I think.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, you know, very personally for me, having those sorts of conversations, you know, it takes a lot. Because of everything that we've been, as you said, all this false armor that we've put on ourselves to go and find the Holy Grail that was actually right next to us all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing with men being with men, it quickly becomes normalized. When one man is willing to be vulnerable and open up, and again, processes and rituals and safe environment, what occurs is suddenly men sit there and go, it's not just me. It's not just me that was inappropriate. It's not just me that, you know, whatever your story is, you start to normalize it and go, and that creates a safety. Because then you realize that stuff you've been holding on to, that shame of the way you showed up or whatever your story is, you know, there's a common theme for the masculine in that. And it's not just you. This is the hero's journey. This is the relative experience we call life. You know, remember, cannot know joy unless I've known pain.
I just want to slightly flip the conversation slightly. So as we talked about, I think when we spoke on the phone, I've become a father recently for the first time. And coincidentally, completely, his middle name is Bodhi. So I think that was part of the attraction of us wanting to speak to each other. And I, you know, this is why our conversation is, for me personally, is incredibly timely. And I wanted to ask you, as a father, as a grandfather, incredibly, you wouldn't tell it from your voice, but you are a grandfather as well, I believe. Okay, what advice would you give me as a new dad to my son? I know that's a huge question, but I'd love to ask it.
Yeah, and to your point, so I've got 4 children, 2 girls, 2 boys, and 9 grandchildren. And,
wow.
7 granddaughters, which is amazing. Okay. Seeing the beautiful family, the rise of the family. I think the fundamental piece, Richard, and again, you know, this is for the listeners, it's a matter of how you take this, is that there's going to be dysfunction in the relationship between parent and child. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned earlier, life is a relative experience. And what I mean by that is that, you know, there is black, yeah, and there's white. There's up and there's down. And when it comes to the human experience, particularly as I mentioned around emotions, you know, my personal experience and my personal belief is that we cannot know joy unless we've known pain. So it's all the emotions are part of the human experience. I know a lot of people would like their children to, inverted commas, not have negative emotions. Whereas to me, emotions are just energy in motion. They're part of the human experience. And the rough and tumble of that, particularly 0 to 7, when our fundamental operating context is set, the primary rough and tumble for most of us is our parents. And so the key piece to realize is that's going to occur for your son. And whatever's going on for you, yeah, they're the biggest trigger for parts of you that you haven't acknowledged and resolved. It's not about them. Yeah. And this is the powerful work of parenting, of long-term relationship, grandparenting. It's like whenever I get triggered by my children, it's just an unresolved part of me. It's just a part of me that I haven't acknowledged and healed. And the fast way is just to notice the emotions, you know, like children are fantastic, you know, you think you've done the work on yourself. I love myself. I value myself. And then the kids go, you really love yourself? What about this, Dad? They start pressing every button that you thought you'd sorted.
Oh, that button.
Exactly. And that's parenting from a place of self-awareness.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's easy. It's simple. The concepts are simple. I'm not saying this is easy. You know, when you've been up all night with a teething baby, yeah, you're both working perhaps, you know, and your buttons are getting pressed. Yet with awareness, with practice, with presence, one, you can let go of the concept that this is going to be the perfect child, whatever that means, and that they're not going to experience the rough and tumble and messiness called life. And two is take responsibility that the most powerful parenting tool is the way I show up and deal with my stuff.
Wow, thank you. And some of the great advice I've had from other parents is your child is going to be your greatest teacher. You know, you're going to be learning every day from this, from newborn all the way through. And I've in 3 months, I've already seen that. But that's thank you for your words of wisdom there and huge experience.
Yeah. And to that point, again, and I say this flippantly at times, yet often people have education funds for their children. You know, they're going to grow up and, you know, college and all those things. And what I often say is also start your therapy fund. And most of the therapy is going to be about you. So if they want to be the best version of themselves, coaching, therapy, whatever it is, there's going to be stuff. There's father-son stuff, the ancestral stuff. You know, my father's 90 today. And
You
know, I'm still releasing ancestral stuff with my father. You know, and that's okay. That, again, to me, from an archetypal point of view, from a third dimensional point of view, that's part of the human experience. It's like, that's the gift he brought me.
And when you say that, releasing ancestral stuff, what do you mean there? What can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, you know, I mean, there is a belief system that what happens in families, yeah, is that energetically there can be traits, cords, energy that are travel through, you know, the shame and secrets, if we look at a lot of different cultures. And so my father, just looking at his lifetime, came into the world with lots of challenges, lots of shame in with his parents and his upbringing. And, you know, as recently as yesterday, I was doing a process where I realized I can let go of some of that. I wasn't aware of it, but I was holding so much of that family, ancestral, you know. If you think of the distortion of the patriarch, you know, my family's come from a very distorted patriarchal lineage. And for me to acknowledge and let go of that, because unconsciously I was carrying some of that, some of those beliefs, or some of that I was wrong because they were wrong. Or does that make sense?
Yeah, this gives a real sense of some of your experience. And to say that, you know, the position you find yourself in, you're still doing that work and you're still having that awareness now, I think maybe that's reassuring to everybody. this is not a short journey, but a life's work by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, we touched on, like, in long-term relationship, it's about being clear what's the context of the relationship. Yeah, in any relationship, what's the context? Yeah, remember, context gives meaning to the content. And so part of the context of the relationship I have with my wife, yeah, is to support each other to grow and be the best we can be. And in my experience as a coach, and certainly my observation is, you know, Roger Federer still has a coach. It's like, if you want to be the best version of yourself, then normally you're getting some support, some objective support. You know, maybe it's a close friend, maybe it's a family member, yet often a professional. And I don't think that has to stop. You know, when I work with couples, one of the first things I talk to them about from a contextual point of view is, this isn't about fixing problems. This is about growing and developing. And when you see it that way, and obviously there's stuff that comes up, yet it's, you know, I don't go to my coach, you know, my relationship coach, just because I've got all these problems. I go because I haven't done long-term relationship before. I'd like to be the best version of myself, and I want to keep improving. I want to keep growing and developing and being the best version of myself.
Yeah, like a real honesty with self in that. As you say, I can keep growing. This isn't done.
Yeah, which is vital for the masculine. And again, going back full loop to the spark of long-term relationships. Yeah, the masculine. Yeah, it's about leaning and being on your edge. Yeah, if you're not on your edge, whatever that looks like for you in a healthy way, then what occurs is you atrophy, you get back in that comfort zone, you lose the juice and polarity. And that's okay. If your relationship's about companionship, every relationship's different, yeah, and you just want to share the journey together as companions, that's okay. Yet if you want to keep the juice and the spark, yeah, then again, for the masculine, it's about that willingness to stay on the edge. Yeah, and often in the hero's journey, the biggest edge is the internal work. You know, slaying the dragons isn't about climbing the mountain. It's about the internal work of really facing with vulnerability some of those aspects of ourselves.
Wow. Just so much wonderful wisdom and truth and honesty in there, Bodhi. I've just loved this conversation. So just as I always do towards the end of our conversations, and we kind of opened on this as well. You talked about your daily practice. Could you just tell us like three things that you're doing that keep your mojo, as you said, about presence, purpose, and passion? How do you keep that?
Yeah, I mean, my daily practice is very much, obviously live near the beach, so I surf each morning. And one of the tools that my wife and I both use is some grounding meditation. And so one of the things is to get in our bodies and fully inhabit our bodies. And so that's part of my practice. And yoga is a key part of my practice, which helps me, again, stay in my body. So they're the tools I use, I guess, around presence. And we often work with couples around bringing rituals into their marriage. You know, what are the sacred rituals that you can bring in? And they can be really simple things. This isn't about lighting a candle and sitting around an altar. This is the simplicity. Every day we have things we do together, you know, couples do together. It's just how can you bring presence into that in a meaningful way, not in a contrived way. Purpose is, again, I have a Hariq meditation, which I teach my clients, the Hariq line, which is all, it's that's where our purpose lives. So the analogy, Richard, is that, and our Hariq line, those who are familiar with the Hara, you know, martial arts, things like that, there is a vertical current that runs through us all. And the analogy is that if the world is an orchestra, there is one note that is Richard Stokes. Mm. And if you play that note to the best of your ability, then the symphony is amazing. And this meditation, along with others, that note is when you're on purpose, when you're in the flow, those sorts of things. And so that's part of my practice, is to do my best to keep that Hariq line aligned, and follow the energy from that place. And then the passion is very much, again, keeping the playfulness, keeping the polarity. Certainly the willingness to dance and explore, life, really. Grandchildren have been another huge rite of passage for me. I take them down to the beach and I'm just my little seven-year-old again. It's just so much fun. And grandparents will tell you that, I think, is it's just such a delight to bring your little child out to play with you, with the other little children.
Yes, yeah, and so healthy, I'm sure, for your grandchildren to be spending all that time with you, because they're getting something quite different from you, whether it be knowledge or and energy. I imagine it's a very different energy to a parental one.
Yeah, I mean, if one of the things, my beliefs around childhood is it's, so much of it's about exposure. What you're exposed to informs so much of who you are. And in the busyness of working parents, one of the gifts of being a grandfather is that I can perhaps expose them to different things and let them explore that. My oldest granddaughter, who's 9, is now surfing with me, and it's such a delight as they move through those rites of passage. They all have their interests and things. So, I think grandparenting allows you to perhaps have a meta view at times and introduce things that the parents may not have time for.
Bodhi, that was just a wonderful conversation. Just filled me with so much energy and thought. I've got lots to do. Hopefully it's been super useful for all our listeners as well. So I'd just like to thank you for taking the time to be on the Mojo podcast today.
Yeah, thank you, Richard. It's been a delight. And there's, as you say, so much more to share. And hopefully there's some little nuggets in there for listeners. And just takeaways to reflect on around, the way you're showing up in your marriage, as a parent and at work. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Wow. So there you go. Sum that up, Richard. Impossible. In fact, my advice is to listen again. It's worth every minute, I promise you. So many nuggets in there. But there are some big themes that are emerging for me. Certainly the importance of tuning into our own emotions. As Bodhi said, it's the best place to get information quicker than anywhere else, is by really being conscious of our emotions. And the importance of understanding your comfort zone, stepping out of it and finding your edge, that place where growth and learning really happens. What are you doing to find your edge? How are you keeping the juice in your key relationships? And then rituals. I love this and found it very personally true. whether we call them rituals or not. My wife and I have some. For example, we have something called family hug time, when we all get on the bed and basically have lots of hugs and kisses. And that's obviously my wife and I, our baby Noah, and our dog Cuba. It's just the best time of day. I feel truly blessed to have Bodhi's wisdom on the show. Thank you, my friend. I really, really enjoyed that. Please do go and find out more about Bodhi's work, both for business and individuals. All those details will be in the show notes. Next week on the Mojo podcast, we continue the theme of growth with my guest, Sophie True. But this is a very particular form of growth, post-traumatic growth. There's a lot of trauma in life. As Bodhi said, to know joy, you need to know pain. Sophie shares her story of survival and growth. It's a cracker. So please subscribe to get a notification of when that one lands. And yes, please do leave a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode and that short review. These simple acts really do make a huge difference in allowing more people to discover the Mojo podcast and hear amazing voices and stories such as Bodhi's. So until next week, I hope your mojo continues to flow.